Welcome to another episode of COVID Chronicles, a podcast by, for, and about people affiliated with Portland Mennonite Church in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum, and my guest is Lowell Herr. Good morning and welcome, Lowell.
Good morning.
Good to have you with me. Now, I think of you as a long-term member of Portland Mennonite because you were here when we arrived 22 years ago. However, I did a little research and you're not a native Oregonian. So tell me where you started in life.
I started in Martinsburg, Pennsylvania. I was actually born 5 miles away because Martinsburg is so small they did not have a hospital. So my birth is Roaring Spring, Pennsylvania. That's almost right in the center of the state, very close to Altoona, where in the 1940s, that's where the locomotives were repaired in the country. They were known as the shops.
Is that a place that your ancestors had been for some time, or...?
Yes, my mother is from Martinsburg. I think that she actually was born and grew up out near Scottsdale, a place called, I think, Shelby, but her father worked in the publishing house.
The Mennonite Publishing House.
Yeah, in Scottsdale, Pennsylvania.
And just for those Oregonians who don't know where that is, that's Western Pennsylvania.
Very close to Pittsburgh, which was, at that time, the 10th largest city in the country. Yeah, Pennsylvania had, Philadelphia was, I think, third, and Pittsburgh was number 10.
Amazing. Now, did your family move around as you were growing up, or did you stay pretty much in that spot?
We stayed put. I spent my first 8 years in Martinsburg, and my father was the principal of the school system, very small town of about 1,800. So as children, we had full reign of the town. We could go any place because everyone in the town knew who we were. And if we got in trouble, we knew that our parents would know faster than we got home. So it was a great place to grow up. We played baseball in the summer and roller skated all over town and did everything like spotting airplanes in World War II with my father.
What does that mean?
Well, there was an effort during the war to make people conscious that we were in a war. For example, we would save the foil off of chewing gum wrappers. And we would stomp tin cans for the metal, and that would be recycled. We went out on the railroad track and gathered milkweed because we were told it was used in parachutes or the insulation kind of material. So we did all kinds of things like that. And one of the activities in our town, we were inland, but there was still always the worry that the Germans were going to come in and bomb the country. So we had in a town hall, you'd climb up some stairs into a tiny little cupola that allowed maximum of 3 people. And that would be my father, my brother, and myself. And he had a binoculars and a book listing all the airplanes. And when an airplane would fly by, he would get the binoculars out, spot the airplane, say what kind it was, and call in to Altoona and identify what the plane was and in what direction it was flying. And that was one of the activities we did at night.
How many siblings are there in your family?
Just my brother and myself, and Ken's no longer living.
Are you the oldest or the youngest?
Youngest, by 4 years.
So you said that you spent the first 8 years of your life there, and then where?
Then there was a consolidation of schools happening, and my father felt that he probably wouldn't be the person selected for the job. So we moved to southeastern Pennsylvania, very close to York. And that's about 35 miles west of Lancaster. And that's where I went to high school, first in Hanover, started ninth grade there because my parents, they were building a new house. So I lived with my grandparents for 18 months on a farm. And there's a story there too that I could tell you.
Please.
Then I went to high school in Spring Grove, which is, again, another small town in southeastern Pennsylvania. But the farm where I spent those 18 months in 50 and 51, that farm was on the street, Elm Avenue, where either the Northern or Southern troops marched past that farm for the battle up in Gettysburg, the Civil War battle. And I still remember my great-grandfather, who was about 8 or 9 years old when those troops went by. And he would tell stories of how they hid his father in the haymow so that he wouldn't be conscripted. And they took their horses from the farm. We stole the horses. And we think that might have been the Southern, but we do not know. It could have been the Northern forces. There's another parallel road called McCherrystown Road. And the other forces were on that road. And one force went through Elm Avenue because there was a battle there in Hanover the day before the big battle in Gettysburg, that three-day battle. So I've got that, you know, here I am, and Civil War seems way, way back, but I've got that connection with my great-grandfather.
That's incredible. So you graduated from high school there, and what came next, and how did you make that decision?
Well, I wanted to play professional baseball and play college basketball. And I was recruited by a local college, and I was going to go to that college. But before I knew it, my father had the admissions director from EMC was up at the high school, pulled me out of class, and I talked with him. And before I knew what was going on, I was enrolled at EMC.
Eastern Mennonite College.
Yep, because they were not going to let me stray. So I did not play professional baseball, or I did not play college basketball for interscholastic sports.
And so, how did you feel about that?
Well, you know, that it was the kind of thing you just obeyed your parents. And I was disappointed, particularly about baseball, because I had been recruited by the Detroit Tigers.
The professional team.
Yeah, yeah, the Tigers.
What position?
Al Newhouser was a pitcher at that time. I was a pitcher.
So did you know at that moment that that was going to be probably the end of your professional baseball career, or did you still hope?
Yeah, and I would never have made the bigs. I was not big enough. But it was sort of an ego trip probably that never was going to happen. So it was the right thing to go to EMC, and if I hadn't gone there, I never would have met Grace.
So you headed for Harrisonburg, Virginia?
Yes, that was 1954. And then in 55, that summer, three of us drove a 39 Plymouth to Fairbanks, Alaska.
Who's the three of us?
A fellow named Fred Denlinger of Lancaster area, Fred Gingrich of Iowa. And so we went to Alaska, and one worked in the gold mines and two of us worked on construction.
Where did you get that idea?
A couple of fellows from EMC had gone up there in prior years, and we heard that if you went to Alaska and could get a job, you could make good money. which we did, but it was tough getting a job. We had a shorthand book. I don't know if you remember those little green books that you'd take shorthand in. We filled up one of those shorthand books with all the addresses in Fairbanks. And we just went from place to place to place, and we ran out of places and started back over again. And we heard of this fellow who was hiring. So we knocked on his door, and he had jobs for two of us. The one fellow already had the gold mining job. And we were down to about 25 cents. And we knocked on his door, and he said, yes, I'm hiring. He said, here's your slips. So we went over to the union office, and he said, walk right past the long line because the wait is up to August right now. And this was in June. We went to the line, got our union cards, and we heard all kinds of cussing at us because we had jumped the line. We ran out of that office, got in our car, packed up, headed off for the job.
Did either of you have construction experience?
No. We were hod carriers. So all they wanted was to build muscle for 3 months. And I gained 20 pounds, and it was all muscle. And the hardest job I ever had was to unload 20 tons of cement in 4 hours. Two of us would unload 20 tons in 4 hours. So that...
There's obviously many, many more stories involved in that trip.
Oh, many, many, many. Yeah. Great trip.
And then at the end of the summer, you got back in your car and drove back to Virginia.
Yep. We had over 4,000 miles of dirt and gravel road that summer because the Alcan was not paved.
How much money did you make?
We made $3.25 an hour and 14 hours a week. We got time and half. I sent home on a couple occasions a check that was larger than my father was making running a large school system in Pennsylvania.
It was worth it.
Yeah, I paid for my college that year. But again, college was much, much lower than today. College was never more than $1,000 for tuition, room and board, and books. Never over 1,000 total.
In the 4 years that you were there?
Yes, you're right.
At what point did you make a decision about what your major would be?
Oh man, that's another story. I bounced all over the place. Started out, I was going to be a barber. I was going to go into hotel management. I was going to be a sociology major. I was going to go into pre-med. And finally decided on the sciences. And this is another story. I was sitting in chapel. It was my junior year. And there is that scripture that it said, some will be shepherds. And I didn't think the world needed a shepherd. Some will be preachers. That would have pleased my mother. Some will be prophets. And I didn't have that in me. And some will be teachers. Bingo!
You were taking the scripture literally, weren't you?
And I thought, yeah, I can do that. So I geared and got into student teaching there at EMC and became certified in Virginia, later certified in Pennsylvania, and later certified in Oregon.
Was it a good decision?
Absolutely. I had the best job in the country. Yep.
And you mentioned a young woman. I think her name was Grace. Tell us a bit of that story.
Well, we entered EMC the same year, so we knew each other for 2 years. And I was working with the Augsburger Crusade Group in 1956. We were helping to move trailers, set up the tent, run the bookstore, hand out tracts, announce the meetings, things like that. A fellow named Paul Schrock, you may have heard, he worked for the publishing house for years as book editor. Well, we were with the Myron Augsburger group in 56.
I know Myron Augsburger. His evangelistic tent came to Western New York, where I was growing up.
Would that have been in 56?
It could have been.
Because we were in Williamstown in 1956. We came from the Kitchener-Waterloo area down to Williamstown, and then moved out to Bern in the Midwest, and then the last point was Salem. And at one of those meetings, I saw grace in a different light. And probably talked with her, but nothing else. Went back that fall, and we started dating in November, and we were engaged 2 months later.
Wow. Now, where was she from originally?
Oregon.
And yeah. She had come all the way to Virginia to go to EMC.
Yes. A lot of students from Western went to EMC.
Western Mennonite High School out here.
Yes. And so we got engaged our junior year and got married after we graduated from college in 58.
What attracted you to her?
Oh, she was gorgeous, still is. And she was interesting, well-read, and one of my requirements was that someone have a soft and pleasant voice, and she does. In other words, I did not want a harsh, raspy voice, and strange as that may sound.
I don't think I've ever heard that as a requirement before. And being a voice person, I love that.
Yeah. And so we just hit it off. We had a lot of similar interests. And I found that I just valued her opinion. She just had good sense. And she has a personality that her name is emblematic of who she is.
Where was this wedding?
In Sheridan, Oregon, which was one of the largest churches in the valley at that time.
Mennonite churches.
Yeah. The place was packed because Grace's father was well known in the valley. And I don't remember much about it other than we had phenomenal singing. Grace had gathered a group together and had tremendous singing.
Did some of your family, your parents and brother, were they there as well?
My brother wasn't. He had just come back from the Korean War, which, you know, was a no-no in our family.
So he was in the military?
He was in the military, yes.
And you were raised pacifist Mennonites, I'm
absolutely,
guessing.
Absolutely, absolutely. But during the Second World War, two of my uncles went into the war, and one was killed, shot down over China. And Grace had two uncles in the war, and her one uncle was shot the first day of the invasion into Italy and was paralyzed the rest of his life from neck down. So the war impacted our lives.
So the fact that he signed up or was drafted, it wasn't like he was the first one, your brother.
No, no. But in my case, this is again deviating a little. It goes back to the high school. My father said, Lowell, he said, volunteer for the draft. Because he said, if you try to get exemptions, they'll be able to pull you out of your work up to age, I think at that time, 36 and a half. So I volunteered for the draft. Or I waived my physical, let's say that, waived my physical, finished college, and then to serve as my 1W, I came out here and taught at Western Mennonite School. So Grace and I taught out here for 2 years.
So that was before you went to Virginia?
No, that was, we had finished college.
Okay, I just wanted to get the time.
Yeah, finished college, got married, came out, married here. That fall, we both started teaching at Western Mennonite School.
And for you, that was your 1W, your alternative service?
That's right, 1W. Yes. And the requirement was you had to be so far away from home, and you had to meet particular requirements, and teaching at Western met those requirements.
That worked out really well, didn't it?
It did, yes. Yep.
So was there ever a question about where you were going to live, say, even after those 2 years? Or was it always understood that you were going to stay in Oregon?
I always wanted to be somewhere on the West Coast.
Where did that come from?
Well, I hated the humidity of the East. And I came out, well, that Alaska trip, well, back up. In my room, I had a large National Geographic map, and it had all the national parks. And I wanted to visit national parks. So I came west and loved the west area of the country. That was 55. I was 18 years old. 19 years old, I came west again with Meyer and Augsburger Group. The next year, I came west again to visit Grace and work on her dad's farm for a month and other farms. And then the next year, came west again to get married, taught out here, went back east to get an education, but came back to live permanently.
We're going to jump ahead just a little bit. I can tell already that there's a part two of Lowell Her that's going to need to be recorded a bit later. But at what point did you make the move to Portland, and how did you get involved with what is now Portland Mennonite Church?
Well, I was going to give up teaching because I had taught in a public school in Pennsylvania where my load was absolutely unreasonable. If everyone was there, and the students never were all there, I would have had over 300 students in a day. And I just felt I could not teach. And so I was going to give up teaching and go into computer programming. So I came west. We moved west in 63. The year Kennedy was killed, and I was at Oregon State studying computer science, and Grace was teaching in Corvallis High School. She got a job out here, and that's sort of why I went to Oregon State. I then felt I can't sit at a desk and have all the details of programming, because when I started programming, all the programming was done in ones and zeros. Binary code. And then I went into Fortran and Smalgal and things like that. But I got the yen to go back to teaching. And I was sitting at my desk, and I had two contracts, one to go to McMinnville, one to go to Tigard. And I had pen in hand, and I knew the postman always came about 10 after 1. And it was about 10 to 1. And I thought, they're pestering me to sign one of these contracts, and I'm going to lose the job if I don't get my contract in. And I had pen in hand, and the phone rang. And Dr. McCall at Catlin Gable said, "Lowell, are you still interested in a job?" I had interviewed there about 2 months before, and they didn't have an opening. Said, "Are you still interested?" I said, "Yes. Be up here at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning." I put my pen down and said, "I'll wait another day." I went up and got the job. Now, let me give you a little contrast. At Tigard, they wanted me to teach 5 classes, 4 preparations with 120 students. At Catlin, I had 2 preparations with, get this, I'm not lying, a total of 24 students. Total. total. Do you see why? It was, my father said, Lowell, you're going to have to back into the business office when you get your monthly check. He couldn't believe it. Now, I didn't end up with 24 students. I had many more in later years, but still, it was always manageable.
Did you in any way see that as divine intervention?
I choose to look at it that way. Some would say that's coincidence, it's just the way it happened, but to me, I think it's something else. I choose to look at it as divine intervention. That's where I was supposed to be. I was called to be a teacher there.
And you were teaching what?
Physics and chemistry. And then finally, I worked to the point, I really was more interested in physics, and I increased the enrollment sufficiently, so it wasn't long till I was teaching nothing but physics. As the school grew, and then I could attract enough students to teach nothing but physics.
And that, of course, meant that you were going to make a move to Portland, is that correct?
Oh, yes, yes. And then Grace got an excellent job at West Lynn. So she taught at West Lynn for 32 years, and I taught at Catlin for 35. She retired a little before I did.
And at that point, was it pretty much a no-brainer that you were going to go to Portland Mennonite, or how did that thing work out?
Yeah, as soon as we moved to the Portland area, we started going to PMC. That would have been the fall of 64. And it was over in Xavier Street. And singing was phenomenal because the walls were very hard and there was no absorption of the sound. And we had a fairly young congregation and a lot of good singers. And Stan Krupp led music every Sunday. So Stan was a bass and Dave and Donna Stutzman were there and, you know, Phil and Jesse, and we just had wonderful singing. The area became industrialized, so we didn't have much of a neighborhood, and that was the big reason for moving.
Did you have a role in that young church, say, as the elders or committees or things like that? How soon did you kind of get really involved, in addition to music, which if anybody knows Lowell, they know how much you love good music.
Oh, yes. Well, I taught Sunday school class quite a bit, and when we moved over to the new church, I was moderator, or whatever you call them, church chairman for a while.
And that's the church where we are right now at 35th and Main. So I'm going to guess that you were involved in making that decision, if you were congregational chair and making that move, or...
I was chair after the move was made. I did not find the church, but I was involved in, can we handle it financially, those decisions, because we really wanted to buy that building next door, but we did not have $90,000 to do it.
And we still wish that you had, right?
Oh, yes. Yes, I wish we had that, but that wasn't to be. So yes, that's been my involvement. And then as far as the church at large, I was on the Mennonite Board of Education for 8 years. That was 1980 through 88. And then those last years, they started the Mennonite Foundation. There were two of us on that initial committee to help guide the endowment fund for the colleges and universities and seminaries. And I was on that until 2015. So I was with that group for 35 years.
Well, Lowell, there are obviously so, so many more stories that we're definitely going to do a part two. But for right now, is there any sort of final word that you have, any words of wisdom as we're making our way through this pandemic and kind of what's helping you get through it?
Well, music I can hardly handle the news, so I dial up Beethoven, Mozart. Oh, I got to tell you a little story. In 1960, after we finished at Western, I was going to go to San Diego State University and study mathematics. So Grace and I drove down, but prior to that trip, we were sealing the interior of what was the new ad building at Western at that time. And it was a cold, rainy August. And so everything was closed up. And we were sealing this plywood with a toxic material. And that night I got very sick, got what turned out to be pulmonary pericarditis. And when we drove down to California, Grace drove the whole way, and believe it or not, on Route 1, not 101, Route 1, and I broke a fever every night. And we got down there, and I started to recover. In fact, we went out and played golf one day, but that night I came back, and I couldn't lie down because my chest hurt so much. But I somehow got onto the San Diego campus, and I signed up for my classes, and I collapsed on the campus. And to this day, I have no idea how I got home, but somehow I got back to the house, where our apartment. And that night, Grace took me to a county hospital, but there was a knifing there, and so they couldn't see us. So it was the next day we went to another hospital. So I was hospitalized for 5 days, and I was out of commission for 4 months until I recovered. And that took us back to Pennsylvania.
To be continued.
Yeah, there's more stories to tell.
For sure. Well, for the time being, Lowell, thank you so much for sharing some of these incredible stories with us.
Well, you're very, very welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
And thank you for joining us for this episode of COVID Chronicles. We hope you discovered something new and feel more connected to your friends at Portland Mennonite. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum. Until next time, stay well and keep the faith.